My name's Peter Bell. I'm founder and CTO at CTO Connection, a community where senior engineering leaders can share problems and get answers. Check us out at ctoconnection.com. Today, I'm going to be chatting with Mai Irie. Mai is a director of engineering, but twice in the last 2 years, she's had to deal with managing the engineering org after her CTO or their equivalent left. In this interview, we'll look at some best practices for taking over an engineering org in times of transition. First, I want to take a moment to thank our partners. AWS is our global partner, and for 2021, CodeClimate, Carrot, and LaunchDarkly are our sustaining sponsors, and without them, we couldn't afford to create these resources for the community. So, thanks so much. So, Mai, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Peter.
So, I'd love to dive straight into this topic because it's absolutely fascinating to me. And I know you've had this experience twice now. So maybe focusing on the second time where you had like a little bit of time to reflect and say, how can I do it better? What was the first thing you did when you found you were losing your engineering leader?
Yeah. So the second time around, I made sure that I took a moment to breathe, right? The first time, and I think the second time too, I thought it was a joke or maybe I misheard the information. And so, whenever you have a big transition or change, there's all sorts of emotions and feelings that come up. And so a book that that I think really describes this feeling really well is one by William Bridges. It's called Managing Transitions, Making the Most of the Change, and really describes this feeling that I feel both times pretty accurately. So there's that psychological impact, right, of when you have that information that you're processing in real time, and at the same time, a sense of grief, if you will, of your own identity changing at that very moment, right? So with the feelings of like shock, a little denial, of course, that continues for a bit, and some apprehension, maybe a little sadness, right? There's at that same time in parallel this flood of like uncertainty or questions and worries about, oh, what are my responsibilities going to be, and some self-doubt too. So the second time around, I recognized all of those feelings and emotions and really made sure to take a moment to breathe. And I think because it's happened twice now, there's a bit of humor that also came around and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is happening again. Like, are you kidding me? What's going on here?
So that's great. So once you like kind of saw the humor in the moment, but also you breathe through that initial, oh no, like this isn't happening. Like, you know, seven stages, right? And you kind of got through the whole process. What did you do next? Like, what was the next thing you did?
Yeah. So just like, you know, how I was feeling these feelings and having these thoughts, my very next step was to think about how the leadership change is going to impact the wider team. Right. So just taking stock of like how I was feeling in that moment, like likely if this happens to other folks in the same way that it's happened to me, your team members are going to have similar feelings. There might even be maybe even more heightened emotions to the point of like overreaction if possibly, and thinking like, oh no, the ship is like, is it sinking? Like, what's going on here? So way more bigger emotions are possible on the team. Yeah. So it, the very next step is to think about that impact on the wider team.
Got it. And then, so presumably at some point in time, it's like, okay, we got over the seven stages. We realized that there may be issues with team, but you got to have this discussion with the departing leader. So how did you handle that first kind of planning meeting or Zoom call post-announcement?
With the planning leader, yeah. Yeah, so I think it is so key, both for like the departing leader and also the team, is to over-communicate. So like, there's no moment then now to really be clear as to like, what is the plan for the interim? Like, if it's even if it's not half baked, like, how are we going to communicate out? Like, this is who is involved in the decision. This is when, how, what we're thinking about it. We might not have all the pieces. We're targeting this date to have this answer to give to you. What is the plan for the future and now, and how will folks in the team be involved in creating this new future, right? There's also I mean, it makes so much sense, right? Like, I've had really respected leaders who've departed, to take a moment to acknowledge that loss, right? Like, there's somebody who's had a great impact on the organization, has like probably served in a great mentoring capacity, managed folks on the team, has in have an impact on your own career. Certainly for me, that's been the case. And acknowledging and talking about it, and in a way celebrating it, right? And I think it makes sense to celebrate and talk about it both like with the departing leader, but also like with the whole team as well. There's this moment where you're definitely like pairing two different things at the same time, acknowledging the contributions and celebrating, you know, the impact that that person has had, while at the same time talking about what is going to remain consistent, right? And like what could change. And in terms of consistency, I like to think about who is remaining on the team, right? There's all sorts of people on the team who are like the cultural pillars, right, of the engineering organization. Sure, the leader is helping to bolster and strengthen and really create a positive culture, but it's not just a community of one. So there is a continuation in the philosophy and practices and impact of that person. And there's also this opportunity, right, to think about, oh, what are our needs now and in the future? What experiences would make sense to add to the table? Like, let's open this conversation up a little bit and talk about it. I think that's the positive part of this kind of transition. That's good to talk about. It gives the an entryway for folks to share their ideas and be more open about their feedback as well.
That makes a bunch of sense. So obviously you talked a little earlier about this could have a big impact on the team. And I mean, that's both from a morale perspective, like, are we going to lose the team? And from a productivity perspective, like, are we really going to, kill it this sprint? Or are there going to be a few bumps just with people being a little concerned and not quite sure what's happening next? So how did you think about engaging with the team and providing kind of a stable footing to handle that transition?
Yeah, I mean, if we have a one thing that, you know, I'm sure most engineering leaders, if not all, have learned in reflecting in the past year, right? Of all the changes and things going on in our world and internally at different companies, like, it is another moment to make space, right? To ensure that like your culture is stronger and people form deeper relationships by making space. And by making space, I mean having some forums where you are working together to create this continuation and even more positive future looking space that like honors the past and doesn't create this negative spiral that can happen with like really siloed conversations. So examples like ask me anything are really helpful. They're hard. Be prepared for some hard-hitting questions. And so the preparation I would say for that is definitely an anonymous form that people submit to you prior, so you can, you know, as a leader, mentally prepare yourself for some of the concerns that people are going to bring to the table. Obviously, one-to-one's also a another great space, and it may involve some skip-level conversations as well. If your teams are doing full team retros, depending on the size of the team retros or like retros that are like focusing on certain groups that work together really closely, and having those as other forums to like check people's battery levels. Like, I think like a really easy question is like, what's your battery level? Are you like 0, 50, 75? Let's talk about that. and really taking a step back to think about, okay, who's most impacted by this change, and do we have realistic expectations on how somebody's going to show up to work, right? And if there's wiggle room to think about that, yeah. Were you going to say something?
Sorry, I was just going to ask. So, I mean, it's interesting you talk about the AMAs too. One thing I've noticed is it seems that almost the more psychological safety and the better the culture is, the more difficult the AMA questions can actually end up being. It's actually a positive sign that they're asking really tough questions.
It is. Let me just tell you, you after running an AMA, you might need a little break yourself. It is a lot of people have really good questions, things that like are good to bring to the table if you know it isn't on your radar to think about. So I find them so valuable. It's just another way for the teams to come together and have the same conversation as a group, and form that stronger relationship instead of like just only focusing on the one-to-ones or single team retros.
So we talked a lot about the AMAs, the skip levels, the one-on-ones, the things you can do to ensure that you check in with the team, identify problems early, and make sure that everyone's in a good space. How do you think about productivity over those first few weeks after the announcement?
I touched on this a little bit in that if there is some breathing room that makes sense to add in, like think about that. If there are quick wins to build the team's confidence, like, hey, we still got this. Of course we do. Why not? I think those are important to identify and focus. And also just like celebrating the good normal work. One thing that is really key to be careful of is a shift to like, oh wow, now we've got to like really lean in and lean into this hero kind of culture. There's this like sense of pressure that can arise as well. And so I think it's really important to balance that so folks don't feel like a strange shift. Because one thing for sure, like for me, like I definitely had a lot more on my plate and I had to be careful about how I was modeling that to the team and what I was focusing on prioritizing. So I wasn't stretching myself thin either.
And then, so that's a perfect segue. So I'm guessing the transition was stressful for you. You are suddenly doing two people's job, and the job is more difficult because you're handling the transition. How do you manage your own state and productivity through the transition so that you can be effective but also still take care of yourself?
I think so one thing that I want to say first is having grace. I'm not good at being kind to myself. I have really high expectations for myself. So if it's finding a buddy, if you will, whether internally or externally, to help remind you, like, hey, here are the things that like you said you wanted to focus on and were most critical. Like, forget the other stuff. And hey, like you don't have to do all the things all at once. So I found that first keeping that in mind and having grace for myself was number one, because definitely a lot of gaps to fill in, a lot of depending on how much overlap in the transition, how the transition is going, there's a good amount of work to do and a short amount of time. Even if the transition like is lasts for a bit, there's never enough time. There's never enough time for offboarding. If somebody could offboard forever, you're like, please don't go. So I think that like it's okay if things drop or if you make mistakes, but to own that, right? If something drops and creates a fire for somebody, this is the perfect moment to continue modeling, like, hey, I've made a mistake. This is, what I can do differently, whether that means, hey, I've got too much on my plate. I need to like delegate or deputize or ask for more help, or I just need to be clear in terms of setting expectations. All this is great modeling in this leadership position, and it also shows the team that, like, yeah, okay, there's things are not going to be perfect, but that's still okay. We don't need to strive for perfection. And I think that's so key. The other thing that goes really well with that, obviously, is the focus and prioritization. If you're going to say, okay, this is not something I'm going to worry about right now, there are many techniques for prioritizing, whether it's like most important thing I need to do today, or the quadrant method, or what have you, whatever is working for you. It is really important to be really clear about what is critical and why, to communicate, over communicate why you're working on the thing, and you know that you're not going to be working on this other thing, and set some boundaries. Like, you cannot do all the things, so it's okay to say no, and say like, hey, I can't get to this week. This is what I'm focusing on and why. We'll have to pick that up next week.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then any other advice, just general advice you might share for engineering leaders if they were thrust into a position like this?
Yeah. So something that both experiences so far have taught me is that there, with a new responsibility, there's also like a big door that opens, a lot of possibilities. So just like I talked about the possibility and the opportunity for new skills to add to the team, or another opening for the team to reimagine, or not really reimagine, but to talk about like, oh, what, how do we want to move this engineering organization forward? There's also this opening for yourself. So that's what I've learned. Like, I had greater autonomy, like I'm able to make more decisions, take some risks, and also I leaned into building a stronger network too, because I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I need to like talk to some people who've been here and get some advice, some mentorship, and just hear how other organizations are doing. And that really opened my eyes to like, oh, wow, yeah, here are some other areas of focus and then things to ponder and think about. Is this something that relates to my own organization, or just something to think about for the future? So it's also really eye-opening to really lean into your network, expand it, and have those conversations. And recognizing the constraints of your own position. Like, I'm not an executive, so therefore I'm not privy to all the information. I'm not in all the decision-making meetings or in the conversations. So there is that constraint. So at times I found this frustrating, and it was a really great moment to be really curious about that frustration. Is it just because, oh, I just want the seat at the table, or I want the information? And it led me to think about what are the pain points that are surfacing as a result of this constraint? Like, how, and refocus like on the solutions that I can bring to the table. Like, hey, because I'm not involved in XYZ, here is the impact of this. And if we shift this, or I'm more involved in this way, I can be a better partner for blah, 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 right? So I think like stepping back from that initial feeling and asking a lot of questions has really also opened my eyes and more opportunities to collaborate as well. And let's see, what else? I think like the biggest thing is that I never, you know, I was not a person who ever considered a CTO role ever in my career. That's not happening. I'm not experienced. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't want that responsibility, right? Not happening for me. Both of these experiences has given me greater confidence to reaffirm that, hey, I might not know like all the things. I know how to arrive to certain answers, and I have some experience to bring to the table. And it really was eye-opening for me in that I had, it pushed me to have greater courage, right? To own it, if you will, to see myself in a different light. And I'm really grateful for the challenge that this experience has given me. So the only thing that, so I talked about like me, but I think like in terms of like advice for a leader in this position, outside of like thinking about your own goals and like the opportunity, there is also these, it's really important to check in on that team culture continuously, probably more often than you previously were. Thinking about process as well, like, are there things that make sense to remove? Are there things that make sense to shore up? Really helping the team continue to grow and do great work. So just like team dynamics change when somebody joins or leaves a engineering team, the same thing can happen with this leadership transition.
That's great. Just to ask a couple more questions. How the interesting thing, as you said, you're not an executive, and yet effectively you are responsible for filling an executive role until you know, either you get promoted or they backfill the position. How much of your time was spent managing up, and like in dealing with politics and, oh, I got to keep the CFO happy, but if the COO is unhappy, versus actually managing down and making sure that your managers and your team were in good shape?
Yeah, I think it's why I did both, right? And do both. A lot of the managing up is setting expectations and also gaining that context and forming new, stronger relationships. A lot of opportunity there to really understand what folks are thinking about, what their pain points are, what opportunities there are. Again, going back to those quick wins and ensuring like some good real alignment there. I've talked a lot about managing the teams, but I think it is something that really was eye-opening for me, just for both talking to folks externally, but also being more part of the conversations, is that business aspect, like the overall like business, long-term business vision, and having more opportunity to think about a longer-term technical vision and what kind of investments that would make, and really thinking like in a much broader and higher level scope. So yeah, that's not really much so much managing up, but there's more conversations and relationships to have and to build.
Got it. And then I guess as a final question, given that you've been on the other side of this, do you have any advice for a potentially departing boss? If you could speak to a CTO who was just about to leave their team, what are some of the high points that you'd share that might help them to make the transition a little more seamless?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I think hopefully a lot of executive leaders are thinking about this if they are in that transition space. But it's all about how much are you involved, right, in certain decisions? Like how much have you deputized to the team to kind of own and be autonomous about? Who are the folks that the team goes to rather than you? And ensuring like that is the case, I think makes a smoother transition. Because one, it's not being transferred to a single person. It's already kind of distributed, if you will. And so it's easy to point both to the rest of the organization, like here's why things are in a good place and why I feel confident and why the next leader will be able to like kind of ease in here and make even more contributions. And also to the team as well, like back to those cultural pillars, like, hey, this is, here's why I think, you know, you have this, you've got this, right? And pointing to those examples, those people, the processes that are already in place, remind people, like, again, just like for me, like, oh, right, like we do have the experience and skills and things like kind of like already baked in.
My, that was great. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your wisdom and your experiences.
Yeah, I so appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.